हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so page 67, chapter 20, studying the structure of the universe. Pratigya. Learned scholars who are free from mistakes, illusions, and propensities to cheat have thus described the planetary systems and their particular symptoms, measurements, and locations. Right? So that's an important part, is that those who are beyond conditioning have described this. So this is correct. Now, if we can't understand that, that's due to our conditioning. Right? It's not something else. Right? Yeah?
But I'm objective.
Maybe objecting. close. That's close. The particular of this chapter is taken from text 38, spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami regarding the authority of the descending process of Vedic knowledge via bona fide representatives of the Supreme Lord. This process is superior to both the ascending process and the unauthorized descending process based on whimsical and imperfect interpretations of misperceived so-called scientific observations viewed through the filter of theories developed a few hundred years ago, which were never proven, although they are accepted and taught as fact by unscrupulous men whose aim is to ignore the existence and influence of the Supreme Lord. Wow. That's a sentence.
This is good.
I'm not sure.
Huh?
Oh, that's Hotuswami.
Yeah,
okay.
Like
that's a sentence, right? Footnote 24. Suhutra Maharaj writes in this connection, How can I be certain that what you are telling me is true? Every thinking person asks and get asked this question. The Vedic philosophy arrives at certitude through praman. The Sanskrit word pramana refers to sources of knowledge that are held to be valid. In the Brahma-Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, the school of Vedic knowledge that ISKCON represents, there are three pramans. There are pratyaksha, direct perception, anuman, reason, and shabda, authoritative testimony. Of these three pramanas, shabda is imperative, while pratyaksha and anuman are supportive. Right? So you have to have shabda. Whether you have the other two or not, that's another thing. In other words, if we accept the shabda, then with time we'll catch the others. We'll be able to see them. Right? Because by contemplating, by applying, then we'll start to see. You know, first we'll get the anuman, then we'll get the pratyaksha, right? First, it's inferred, it seems to be, and then we'll actually get the experience.
So pratyaksha is the actual realization of the shabda.
Yes, you could say pratyaksha is you've realized, but it has to be based on shabda. So in other words, pratyaksha is the position you want to get to, but you can only get there from shabda. If you start with pratyaksha, then you'll never get realization.
Yeah.
Like that. That's the whole point. That's why he used these unscrupulous men, right, you know?
Yeah.
Like that. So-called scientific observations.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the thing, is that it's not actually scientific.
No.
They may be using a so-called scientific approach, just mean there's a structure to it.
Right.
But it doesn't mean the basis of what they're talking about is actually scientific.
The paradigm is
unscientific. Yeah, the paradigm is subjective.
Yeah.
Means, in other words, whatever is accepted by the authority within the academy at the time. And that keeps changing over time. Right? Then, you know, because before, the paradigm was theistic. And then more recently, it shifted to being, you know, agnostic. And then nowadays, you can be full-on atheistic. And that's better. Or as we heard, what was it, the Sorbonne, like that? That's teachers were kicked out of the academy, you know, because they were actually inferring that possibly a theistic solution could be considered.
Yeah.
So they were kicked out. Right? Sorbonne, that's the big university. That's the intellectual university in France. It's considered kind of like the top in the world for intellectual thinking and all that. You know, I mean, you'll probably have some college at Oxford that's like that. And I think Princeton University in America is known like that. So there's a few that are known for just really intellectual forward thinking. So it's considered, I guess, the most forward, you know, of all of them. Like that.
Only...
Yes, it's only a reflection. So, in other words, they're the most farthest in ignorance. That's all. You know, they're championing the total ignorance there. Yeah.
Carrying the baton.
Yeah. You know. Yes. Yeah. You know, they have unlimited ways to get yourself to hell, right? These other colleges only think of a few, right? Yeah.
That's
good. Okay, so that's the whole point, is that Bhaktivinoda, of course, says that realization means pratyaksha, you can see it. When what I've heard, I can see. That doesn't necessarily mean with the senses. It means with the intellect, I've realized it. So that's Shastra Chakshus.
Yes,
Shastra Chakshus, I see through the eyes of Shastra. So that's realization. Yes? It means it's inferred from what you can see, but then you get where you realize that. Here he said, direct perception. So that can mean direct perception means through the senses, or direct perception means I actually can see it.
First, you use perception.
What we go by generally in the ascending process is pratyaksha. We see it with our senses. Then we start developing our theories. The Vedic sense is you hear from authority, then you start applying it. And then that's where you use the speculation, right? But if you start with the speculation, it will always be wrong. You know, it probably gives the example of big mathematical calculation. If you start with some wrong point, even though the rest of it is all correct, it will be wrong.
So what's the point of
anuman? Anuman is how you can infer something that you can't see.
And it also be how you connect what you see with the self.
Yes, that's also that. It's just the connecting point. Because I, like the column, okay, I've heard that Krishna is pervading everything. So then I can infer that if he's pervading everything, and here's a column which is part of everything, Krishna is pervading the column. Right? But pratyaksha, I can't see it. Right? But I can come to the point where I actually do see it. Not that I actually see Krishna sitting inside, you know, like that. But it's, I can actually realize that that's there, so it's a way that I perceive things. It's a vision that you actually see. It can also mean that you can actually directly see it. We say, okay, there's birth, death, old age, and disease, and you go out walking in the street, and you see, you know, the person coming by with the pram, and then you see the old guy, and then you see, you know, you can see all that. So that would be directly with the senses I see it. Otherwise, it's with the mind's eye you can see it. But it's not just theoretical that I put, okay, A equals B, B equals C, so therefore A equals C. It's not intellectual. You actually, that would be anuman. But when you see that, that would be perfection. So that's what these sages, they can see on that level.
It's like the matrix when you can see the numbers.
Yes, like that. When you can see the numbers, then you're doing good.
Then you're doing good.
Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay.
Right.
Yes.
So when it says, you know, they've seen the truth.
Yes.
They've realized the truth,
yes.
But also they could see
they
in,
can
in
see
a
it.
Person.
They can see it either through the direct, the gross, or through the subtle.
Yeah.
Okay. Like that. Either way.
Or both.
Both. Or both. Yeah. Yes. So that's the whole point, is that they, in other words, when you see it in pratyaksha, you can practically use it and apply it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. So they can practically use that and see that. So they see that there's no difference between the chandala and the elephant and the guy who manages the elephant. And I think in the verse, how it's arranged, yeah, the Brahman, is that the Chandala and the elephant guy are actually the same God.
Yeah.
It's inferred, though it's not directly stated. Because generally, the guys that manage the elephants are generally really low class.
Mm-hmm.
Can be. You know, it's just like taxi drivers. They can be low class. You can have a nice guy, but, you know, if they were rough, you would just say that's normal.
Yeah.
Right?
Even
the form of
the word
seer.
Yes. Seer is a taken and the word seer is
not as physical
as, you know, I've seen. Yes, yes. Seers, you know, S-W-E-R is a person who has the ability to see on different levels, you know, subtle and physical, a seer.
Okay, okay.
So that's also in the translation
of
that verse, they are the seers of the truth.
Okay.
So
they have the subtle.
They have the vision, or they have the
physical. Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah. Like that. So it's implied that it would mean at least they're seeing the subtle, and whether the gross is seeable or not, that they're seeing, but they can practically use it. That's the point. Pratyaksha means now I can use this knowledge. Right? So that means the sage can see there, here's the Chandala, here's the Brahman, and they can deal with them according to their position, but with no prejudice.
Yes.
Right, so the Chandala, if you have to be careful, he's careful. If you don't have to, he'll be relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then with the Brahman, then he'll deal with him accordingly. That works there. Right, but if someone is prejudiced, then they'll either not like the Brahman or not like the Chandala, even though they could interact nicely. They don't.
Yeah.
So that's the difference. So they can actually apply it and use it.
We can also tell this is the difference between Madhyama and Uttama Adhikari.
Yes.
Because Uttama, he doesn't consider the body, he's dealing directly to the soul.
So, yes.
But then Madhyama, he can see the difference,
yes,
and the unity, and then dealing with the,
yes, yes, yes. Well, Uttama, he can see what's the... It's not that he can't see that there's these aspects of the conditioning, but because he deals directly with the soul, you can surpass that.
Yeah.
So you don't require it.
Yeah.
That's why Prabhupada makes the point is that the Madhyama will look at those who are pious or innocent and those who are not innocent. So he avoids the non-innocent because his technique, which is technical, and not that he couldn't deal with it, but how much time you'd need to take. Right? In other words, like I mentioned, I'm sitting on the plane, and, you know, as soon as I go and sit down and the plane takes off, as soon as the seatbelt sign goes off, this guy from business class walks in and sits in the seat next to me. It's a 3-hour flight. I got time. Because the guy's not going to go away. But now, if I had met him on the street, I probably wouldn't have spent that much time. I would have said something, kind of ended the conversation and left. But by spending 3 hours, then he understands. But the point is in 3 hours, you could have convinced many innocent people, or taken an innocent person much farther. While this guy is just, okay, the devotees, you know, dressed how they are, that's okay. Rather than the other one, in 3 hours, they might have even come to the platform of Shraddha. So that's why the Madhyama doesn't do that. But the Uttama, because they go completely past just the soul, he can get the same effect from the non-innocent, you know, in a quick time. That's why you see Haridas Thakur and others, they would just talk directly to whoever they're talking to. Pallad Maharaj, he just talks to the sons of the demons and he makes them all devotees. Like that. So the Madhyama wouldn't start there. He wouldn't go to the demon Gurukul. He'd go to the, you know, something more pious. Like that.
Yeah.
So that's the difference.
Because nowadays it's becoming more and more popular. And it's even, there is a phrase that you don't make devotees anymore. You just leave a, you know, positive impression on people and just move on. You don't really make devotees as such. They don't join a temple, there's no temple, or there's a temple, but you don't want to, these people join that temple, or, you know, like that. So
you can all go to the heavenly planets together.
Yeah, have some good time.
I've not seen you before.
So we need to go.
Yeah. Was it Washington State Park, right?
Because it's subtle.
Yeah, it's subtle. So the point is that you have to know more. In other words, devotees don't read enough, or they don't have enough drive or faith. Like before, they didn't know much, but they had the drive. So even if they only knew one sentence, they could convince you with that sentence, since they were convinced with that sentence. Yeah. They will talk what they were convinced. So in other words, what they see, that's what they talk to you about.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays is that neither is there a broad range of knowledge, nor is there that kind of drive. Conviction, yes.
Yeah.
So therefore, then, you know, be nice and all that. So that's good. That Krishna gives that as an alternative.
Yeah,
it's right at the bottom. It's a step below being a Mayavadi. Like that. So yes, you can say yes, it's better than being a Mayavadi.
Yeah.
But as far as devotional service, it's not even counted really as. It just means, in other words, you're favorable towards someone who is devotional service. Right? But if we find that we're on that platform and a little bit wary of devotional service, then we might be identifying a little more down with the Mayavadis.
Yeah.
At least their method. Mm-hmm. So,
no, I was just going to say that what Prabhupada does goes straight to the soul.
Yeah. So that's how he could go to anybody. But being Acharya, then he would use the preaching techniques that we can use.
Yeah.
But it's just, he would be so much more effective.
Yeah.
Like we see in Prabhupada Speaks Out, the guy comes in, he says this comment, Prabhupada says something, then there's a little something, a little doubt, and he says the next thing, then he's asking positive Krishna conscious points.
Yeah.
Just in three things, you know. So basically the first paragraph or, you know, something is that part. And then the rest of the article is just Prabhupada explaining.
Yeah.
So if we were doing that, that would take a bit longer. Use the same technique, but we would have to... Yeah. But that's the point is though what he gives is what we can use. But he's that effective because he's coming from the Uttama platform. Yes.
Somehow there's also this phenomena that we start with the primary, mm-hmm. within primary, with mm-hmm. Krishna himself.
Right.
But then after some time we're starting, you know, having doubts about the secondary, and I'm using the secondary, and it really bothers us as a devotee.
Yes.
So is this a natural kind of process, or?
Well, it's that you become aware of these things, because before you just took them for granted, now you're aware, but instead of using it positively, it's used negatively. Like I mentioned that, like in, you know, hardwired the aspect of midlife crisis.
Yeah.
You're supposed to use it for vanaprast.
Yeah.
But people use it as a what do you call it? Second wind in grihastha.
Yeah. They go through all the plastic surgery.
Yeah, like that. And you know, they start the new career. So they basically try to reset as if they're 20 again.
Yeah.
And start all over.
Like we were saying, when Prabhupada wanted to set up the LA temple initially, you know, he wanted to leave the stage where it was and the seats there and have the deities out the back where they were initially. And you know, he wanted people to come in and talk, you know, be spoken to about Krishna consciousness, and then if they were more inclined, then they could go out the back towards Krishna. And he said the same about the centers, like in Paris, that there's a reading room and a center, and when the deities are up, if they want to learn more, then they go up.
Yes.
So it's like that. It, you know,
no, but the difference is
primary,
there's, yeah, but,
the breakdown is,
but there's no doubt in the secondary. See, the devotees had the doubt. That's why then they cleared everything out and did it that way. That's his meaning. His means, in other words, you know that you're trying to get them onto the second floor,
yes.
But you're starting here and just talking and all that. But nowadays, it's this, you know, in the so-called soft preaching, you're talking to them, but you never ever get anywhere. You just kind of leave them on, maybe you talk vegetarian, and even nowadays, I think those who would talk vegetarian before are a little worried about that because the vegans are aggressive and in your face. And so therefore, they're even worried that that's not going to work. You know, so then what's left with? Because most devotees, when they talk just secondary, they would talk like vegetarian. So now you got to talk vegan, you know. And so then, and before, being a vegetarian, you generally talk vegetarian, you talk nicely. It wasn't aggressive. You know, it was just the natural, nice thing to do. But vegans, to talk vegan, you have to be aggressive. You know, it's an aggressive in your face. And if you're not doing this, you're a nonsense. And, you know, I'm talking to devotees. I'm just the karma. You know, so that's the whole thing, is it's not seen. We get distracted by the secondary of the secondary. Instead of understanding Prabhupada's secondary,
at that.
Then we see is that, like community, the point is community just means those who don't live in the temple. But it doesn't mean there's any difference in their commitment to Krishna consciousness and their involvement in Krishna consciousness. It just means that they take care of themselves. Those who live in the temple takes care. And they can, you know, in other words, when everybody else would be at work, they'd be doing work for the temple. And those in the community, then they'll be doing their own work. And since they're out there, they have connections, so they'll do things for the temple also. So, but it's seen as that, oh no, it says he's that, we don't have to worry about him, there's no anxiety. The main point that many appreciate the community is simply if something goes wrong in the community, there's no repercussion on them as a leader in ISKCON. They don't have to deal with it technically. In their mind, something goes wrong. Oh, that's just community, like that. They're not actually, you know. At the same time, is oh, what's that? Oh no, we're all ISKCON. Okay, so then this guy out here, he did this, you know, and that. Oh well, actually, he's community. He's not actually. So it's that's the problem. Is they take these things where there is no position. You use it how you want. So that's the problem. It's gotten so far down that we've replaced ISKCON, you know, Krishna conscious secondary elements with. You're contemporary politically correct, you know, and that is people are getting tired of that. At least the younger generation, they don't like this slipperiness where by political correctness you can pull yourself out of anything and you're not responsible and all that. The young people, educated people, don't like it, and we're still going on in this 90s mentality as if it's right up to date and people love it, but it's not. It's the young professionals that we're talking about, oh, we can't approach them. Why not? Because they don't like how we think. If we present it like Prabhupada gave it, they would buy it lock, stock, and barrel.
Isn't that faith?
It's faith. It's faith. Yeah. You remove faith, your whole process drops. Because as we said, you get to nishtha, that means now there's one, two, there's three, four parts of faith. Then three of sadhusanga, that means you're better at sadhusanga. Then there's two of bhajan kriya, you're better at that. Then you have faith. So if I drop the faith, I may have these other techniques, but actually I drop myself back to the beginning. So then I don't have the faith in sadhus, I don't have the faith in the process. Otherwise, how does that? Where do we attack? The first thing we attack is the sadhus and the process. Oh, the Vedic culture, or you can't do that, that's fanatic. Or yeah, we did that before, but that's outdated, as if eternal is outdated. You know, so that's the problem, is that therefore they're just back on the platform of Shraddha. So in practicality they're functioning like a brand new neophyte. Now if they get the proper association where that faith comes back, and bingo, immediately they'll be back to wherever they were. But until that happens, they are functioning like a neophyte, but at the same time a dangerous neophyte, because they think they know what's going on. Well, a neophyte at least thinks, I don't know what's going on, so they're a little humble. So that's the point. So that's why we have to be careful to distinguish. And here is authority means those who are liberated. So we can't say, oh, Prabhupada said that, but you know, actually it's like this. We don't do that. We take Prabhupada said that, now this situation is like this, now how do we apply that here? That's what we're trying to do. That's faith. That's what we mean by what Prabhu was saying, we start with the primary. Because the Vedanta is universal. Nothing else is universal. Even Jaimini, how many people are really into piety? You know, or logic, how many people are into that? Or you know, Vaisheshika, how many like to, you know, analyze by scientific theory? You know, how many just like to break things down psychologically, like Shankya? You know, how many are into, you know, yoga and all that kind of thing? So that's the thing, is each one of those is very localized. But only Vedanta is universal. It's the only one that actually you can speak to everybody. And any other opinion than that is an opinion. That's the sad part, because it starts from pratyaksha. They go, oh, I saw this, so therefore you can't do this. Right? And, or they tried it, it didn't work, and so because they can't do it, nobody can do it. So that's what they told Prabhupada. It was Prabhupada's godbrother, said, oh, you're going to the West. Says you're going to have to, you know, learn to eat with a fork and knife and all that kind of stuff. He says, no, I'll teach them to eat with their fingers. Like that. And the interesting part is, the more and more restaurants that are there, the wide variety, there's more of a chance that they're eating things with their fingers.
Yeah.
You know? And still, we can't eat with our fingers because it's not Western, you know. Then what's the Lebanese restaurant doing there next door to where you live, right? You know, so, you know, how is it they're doing all right and making money?
Tapas or something super trendy and with it. Fingerfood.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's all like that. That's
the
thing.
McDonald's,
yeah, that's true. That's true. Pizza, eat with your hands. Yeah. Burgers, yeah. Chips, eat with your hands. Chips, eat with your hands. And amazingly enough, though, most people don't know it, asparagus you also are supposed to eat with your hands.
Asparagus, yeah.
Yeah, because they keep it long, and then you pick up the end and eat it. Yeah, but I'm saying, but most would do that. They cut up.
Pizza?
Yeah, yeah.
Only Americans.
And what do you call it? No, even they don't.
They used to.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah. Okay. Sandwiches?
Sandwiches, yeah.
Sandwiches, they have.
Yeah, you have to.
Donuts.
Donuts?
Even the French, with the bread and the cheese and the wine.
Yeah, yeah.
Always just broken, you know?
Yeah, true. Yes, yes. But you have to have that faith that what the acharyas say is correct. Not that I only have faith up to this much and I'm uncomfortable going beyond that, so I'll drop everything down to my level. No, I will keep that, but I'll speak at my level. That's the difference. In other words, it takes that knowledge that I'm not the body, I'm the soul. The other thing is, oh, you can't do that. That is, I am the body, they're the body, and so therefore it won't work. You know, it's just like, I've had it happen so many times, not necessarily in recent times, but I remember before, a lot I come across it. Oh, you know, what are you guys, you know, we're doing, you know, bhakti yoga from India. It says, oh, the caste system, you know, and they start to talk on that. And then you have to talk about, no, it's that what it is, the Vedic system is guna and karma. The devotees don't want to do that. Oh, they brought a caste system. That's bad. What am I supposed to do? You know, like that. Oh, yeah, you know, that's all. We throw that all out. We don't follow the Vedic system. We, you know, we're there. Rather than just explain what the reality is. No, there are those things, but people misuse them. Everything's misused. People use cars nicely. You know, the punk kids go out, they don't use them nicely. You know, I'm saying the surgeon uses a nice knife nicely, and Jack the Ripper used it well, but not, you know, how you say, socially acceptable. That you can do, but it's still, you want to give them enough faith that they would go there. Otherwise, you direct them there, they don't have the faith in that person. You have to generate that. Then you have to, if you want to do that, then let's talk about how that will work for them. The questions they want, what they're looking for. If they've come, like, say, to the temple or something like that, if they come to you, but if you've gone to them, then better you do the best you can. Right? Because you have to at least get something where they'll want to continue. So, yes. We can, but the point is it's not so much the sophistication as it is the sincerity. Because now it means if you're taking someone who's more sophisticated and is also, let's say, cultured, they can appreciate simplicity and purity and sincerity like that. Because they do a lot of charity work or these kind of things, and that's the kind of people they're giving them to, or at least hoping they're giving to. Right, so if you're coming across that way, they appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, okay, you have the prince, and he's out riding in the forest, and he bumps into Cinderella, right? So it's just like she's just a knockout, drop-dead beauty. Is that why he's just totally, or is it her purity, the simplicity, the femininity? You understand? So from that side, even if you're not, the point is if you practice Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarotapi, that verse, that is the essence of everything else. Just they're doing that on a sophisticated level. Or at least projecting that they're doing that. Maybe they're not, but at least it's the accepted that that's how you should behave. I should respect others. I'm not looking for myself. I am humble. I am tolerant. even though I don't want to be and I hate the person, but for culturally it works. So if you come in and you're actually practicing that, that'll catch your attention, because everybody in their circle does that, but they don't mean it. And here's a person who's doing it and meaning it. That will catch their attention. Because they understand gold from a dirty place. That's another thing. Then those ones you can't do much with. Then you just be pleasant and nice and, you know, don't ruffle their feathers. You know, like that. Give them some prasad or, you know. Do something, what you can. So just think about your faith and why you have faith and explain from that position. Why do you have faith in it? Right? You don't know technically, but just why you as a person are doing it. Because that bottom line catches basically everybody. If you do, if they, you know, like sometimes they'll ask, why do you wear that? And if it's, oh, because of this, that, then it's, no, but what about this, that? It just goes on. But you say, why are you wearing that? And you say, because I like it. What are they supposed to say?
It's also like the material sophistication compared to spiritual sophistication. They don't have any spiritual sophistication, whereas you do.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what I was saying. You don't need to match them materially. You've already surpassed them spiritually.
Yeah. So like that. That means that those are sincere. They'll catch it. Those who are sincere will catch it. Yeah, so that's why it works. That's why you see, basically, all devotees are made by a neophyte devotee. Okay. Because just that sincerity and all that. That's why we talk on the thing of the soft preaching. If it's sincere, it will work. If it's just something that you feel insecure, and that's why you use soft preaching, it won't work. Because the point is it's the spiritual that catches attention. Mundane, they already have enough of it. Right? They got sophisticated. There's more people more sophisticated than them. You know what I'm saying? So there's always someone more. Right? Does that make sense? You know, even I was just thinking of it. You have the person who's, let's say you have all the, you know, the people in fashion, and you have the people in most fashion forward, right? But now in that, there's going to be somebody who's like the top of the pile, you know, whatever, the editor in chief of, you know, Vogue or LA or something, one of these, you know. How do you say that? ELLE?
L.
L. Okay, L. You know, like this. But the point is they're not actually creating it. They can see it where it is. So in one sense, technically, the person who creates it actually knows more. The difference is they have the maturity and the depth to see where that fits in. That's why they're the top. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, there's always someone more than you.
Those who are creating it are violently jealous of each other because they all have different...
Yeah, yeah, but this one can pull from everywhere. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's, so it's, there's always someone better at something. So like we said here, this one actually can create that this one can't, but this one can see that this one can't. You know, it means this one did it, but this one can see why. This one can't do it, but these can't see why. You know, therefore one season is fabulous, the next season is terrible. You know what I'm saying? But that person who's, you know, on the top of the pile, anytime you see them, they look good. You understand? So that's I think it was Tom Ford was saying. They were asking him, you know, if he had formal training and this and that. He said, no, he says, it's just, somehow or another, I can just see what will work. You know, I see something, that'll work. So I'm just observing. I look around, I see, and then I'm able to pull together. He says, that's all. It's not that I have a formal training. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that you have something that they don't have. You have faith in Krishna, which is way beyond anything they have. So you just sincerely do that. It will work. Just talk loud enough they can hear you. That's the only thing. That's the only main point. Yeah, that's all.
This is ladies' trick. They talk softly, then everybody's paying attention.
Yeah, yeah, you have to get... Yeah. They walk up close enough that you can tell that they're saying something, but you can't hear it, and you have to...
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So, where were we? Okay, down here. Therefore, when a devotee... Okay. Of these three pramanas, Shabda's imperative. That must be there. While Pratyaksha and Anuman are supportive, right?
Yes.
They'll always be supportive. Whether they're there or not, that's another thing. But they'll just be in support. Therefore, when a devotee of Krishna is asked about the certainty of his beliefs, he usually answers by quoting authority. Guru, the spiritual master, Shastra, the Vedic scriptures, and Sadhu, other devotees respected for their realization of the teachings of Guru and Shastra. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the thing. Sadhu means it's based on Guru and Sadhu. I'm Guru and Shastra. That's what makes them sadhu. A guru's on Shastra. Shastra's is Shastra. So Shabda is the main point. In modern schools of thought, citing authority to certify what we said doesn't seem to count for much anymore. There's a Latin phrase for this kind of proof. Ipse, ipsi dixit. He himself has said it. I never knew that that's what it meant. Yeah. Because I said so. Why do that? Because I said so.
Yeah.
Yes, ipsy diction.
Ipsy diction.
Yeah.
Ultimate authority, yes.
After the answer that disciples of an ancient Greek sage used to give whenever an opponent called the certitude of the sage's doctrine into question, they would say, because he said it.
Yes.
So it would end there. Well, we can say he said it, and if they don't like that, because that's in Shastra, that's because the previous acharyas. Mm-hmm. So we can always take it back. Right? And when you get to God, because he said it, because he breathed it, then you can say, well, what's his authority? Because the devotee said it. Yeah, so we can just keep going.
Yeah.
Yes. The problem modern thinkers have with ipsy dixit proof is that its evidence lies only in words. And words alone don't prove anything, substance and shadow. So the words, especially when you're dealing in English, because the words themselves, then if you know some etymology, you can take it back to a language that does, the words have a little bit more meaning. But in Sanskrit, they're direct. Why the word is there and constructed the way it is because of the nature of what the root is. Right? Because of the root, it builds in a particular way. While for us, we build them in all kinds of ways that aren't there. Mm-hmm. Like that. Okay. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 20th chapter describes Plakshadweep and other islands. There are varshas, rivers, mountains, and devatas, as well as the local mountains. So now we're going outside of the other islands, means other than Jambu. Is that okay? The island of Plakshadweep, which is twice as broad as Jambu, okay, that's the next one, is surrounded by an ocean of salt water. I thought we had the... Oh, as broad as Jambu.
No. What?
It means Jambudweep is surrounded by salt water.
Yeah.
Okay. Should be okay, which is surrounded by north. Okay. Okay. So in other words, the island of Plakshadweep is twice as broad as Jambudweep, which is surrounded by an ocean of salt. Okay. The master of this island is Idma Jihwa, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyavrata.
Okay. Still
going on. Still going on.
Yeah.
The island is divided into seven regions, each with a mountain and a large river. So just like Jambudweep is divided into nine, this is divided into seven, like that. But it's like a donut,
yeah.
So it'll be divided in a slightly different way. Is it just like chunks, bites out of the donut?
Or?
Okay, so it's not that it's got some very far out little... Okay. Okay. The outermost is slightly different.
When we're where we are on Jambudweep, it doesn't look exactly for us like it looks when we look at it from here.
That's why it says learned scholars who are free from mistakes, illusion, and propensities, yes, and cheating, they've described it. Because the point is, if let's say they took their scientific brain and actually wanted with faith to understand the Vedic version, if they applied their scientific theories, they'd start to understand it. Because that they're approaching it properly, then Krishna would reveal it. They would see it through their science. Just like we mentioned, you have Earth is the center, or the Sun is the center. The mechanics of how the planets move is exactly the same. There's not any change. Just that whether we've decided which one, that's why you can prove either one. You could prove that Mars is the center, you know? But definitely you'd have to agree that it's probably Venus is the center.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Despite Mars's claim to the position, right? So that's the whole thing, is that the pattern of how the planets move will be exactly the same with connection to each other. Yeah, the relative motion will be exactly the same. It's just where in the movement you take and make that one the center. It means you fix one of them, they'll all still move in the same. The patterns you get may be different on the ground, but where you move it, but that's the... You know what I'm saying? The patterns in how they'll... on that relative, that place you're relating it to, but their relative motion to each other won't change. So that's the thing, is if you do that, then they'll start to see is, yes, these things could work.
Yes. Could we also imagine that if you're a resident of Lakshadweep, that you wouldn't see it as a donut?
A good chance you might not.
Yeah.
It's just like I said, is we move around, you know, like say Europe. But every time I see a map of Europe, it's totally different than the last one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not totally.
No, but sometimes.
Like, it looks like Australia or something.
Well, like I mentioned with Denmark, there's some far out depictions of Denmark because there's so many islands. It's like, it's totally from imagination sometimes.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing, and so we can't even perceive what's here, and we're saying we're scientific. So that's why people who are beyond illusion and mistakes, when they describe it, we have to accept that. Then if we use that, if we're interested to use the analytical brain, then we'll start to see it. Then we see it.
Yeah,
because like we say, the man in the moon and... What do we say is up there? It's just the man in the moon, but in the Shastra it says it's a rabbit or a deer.
Yeah.
Like that. And if you look at it, you see it is.
Yeah.
You know? But if you don't, then you're just, it's the man in the moon. You know? It's just.
Today's Purnima.
Today's Purnima.
Oh, okay. Then we can see.
Okay, yes. You can see it. Yes. Yes, as he heard it. No, because the point is, whether he's seen it or not is another thing. It's the way he's heard it. But there's his realization, so that gives us a clear understanding. Because that's why he says that Parikshit Maharaj asks a question, he's able to answer, because he has vision. Like that. So he'll tell another story, but that story is also from what he's heard from authority. So that's the beauty of it, is that authority, that's why Shastra is there. All this authority is there, and then you use whichever aspect you need for the particular situation. Right? You don't use one against each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yes.
We heard that Jagat was in the center of Kumandala?
Yes.
Possibly?
Yes. That's the next ring around it. So you have Jambudweep, and then you have the salt ocean. Right, in a circle around it. Then you have Lakshadweep. That's why I said it's like a donut, a circle around there. Then there'll be the next ocean. Then the next land will be, you know, outside that. So each one as it goes, it gets bigger and bigger. So Jambudweep's actually the smallest. It's quite small, actually, in comparison.
And that's all the same as Bhumandala?
Yeah, and then you go like that, seven islands. That's Bhumandala. Right? And then we'll get into what's outside Bhumandala. You know, all the way to the universe, the edge of the universe. I don't think here he deals with the layers of the universe. No, because that's been dealt with more in third and fourth canto, like that. So there we know that there's the layers of the universe. And so this, even though we're here, it's so small, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until you get to the layers of the universe. It seems so big, but then the layers of the universe are so big compared to that, because then it's, you know, each one is twice the size of the other. And then you get up, and then all that land together is so much as then there's out to the edge of the universe. And then you get all that whole universe inside, 10 times thicker than that, is the width of the first layer. And that goes all the way around. So it's 10 and 10, so 20 times that. Then each one, then that's 10 times that. And then, so, and then all that, once we get there, that's unlimitedly big. That's like a mustard seed sitting on top of Anantasesha's head. He doesn't even notice it's there. And then, you know, and then that's one quarter, then he's sitting with Mahavishnu, who's one quarter of infinity. Right? And then you have the spiritual world, which is three quarters of infinity, and Goloka is 51% of that. So it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and you know. Okay. Yeah. So either you run it that way and we feel small, or like Prabhupada did, you run it the other way and then we feel small.
Still,
we
feel small.
Yes. In either case, the idea is we should feel small. That's the whole point of it. Otherwise, why does it matter? Okay, the islands divide into 7 regions, each with a mountain and a large river. The second island is called Salmalidvipa. It is surrounded by an ocean of liquor. It didn't say what the ocean around Plakshadweep was.
It says salt water, it should have the name
of
ocean around.
Yeah, it should, you know. So in other words, it either shouldn't say salt water, or it should say what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either this is connected to Plakshadweep, or they're just mentioning the oceans on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
But that I know of, the ocean goes with the outside.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Okay. It is surrounded by an ocean of liquor and is 3,200,000 miles wide, twice as wide as Plakshadweep, which is twice as wide as Jambudvipa. The master of this island is Yajnabahu, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyavrata. Like Plakshadweep, this island is also divided into 7 regions, each with a mountain and a very large river. The inhabitants of this island worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Chandratma. It didn't say that on Plaksha they worship a particular form of the deity?
It will come out in the
details, okay. The third island, which is surrounded by an ocean of clarified butter, and is also divided into 7 regions. I would expect on that island no one... no one's vegan. Everybody probably deep fries everything there. Yeah, you know. Even probably, you know, oil to paint their houses, they use ghee. Right, you know, so.
How can you swim from such an ocean? Oh my God.
I'm sure it's probably very nice, good quality ghee. They probably don't have any problem with wrinkles, probably no skin diseases. Yeah, you know. You know, you've heard of milk baths, so this is ghee bath. You know, it's not that stinky buffalo ghee.
Maybe they have a different kind of body.
Could be.
Maybe they have a different kind of ghee.
Whatever. I'm sure it's good. Whatever it is. Yes. Yeah. No. That's it. He's just taken from Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. These are just Prabhupada's. Means from 5th canto, Prabhupada gave, what do you call it?
Yeah.
Adhyaya Prakashikas.
And there is also the
pre-Devan
and
pre-Devan. Oh, okay. Okay. So that's the pre, which one? 70? Pre-1975. So after that, they re-edited it and adjusted those. Oh, okay. No, could be. Yeah, could be. The same. Enjoy the same mistakes. Oh, okay. No, this can't help. Oh, okay. Okay. This third island, surrounded by an ocean of clarified butter, is also divided into seven regions. It's called Kushadweep. Its master is Hiranyaratha, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata, and its inhabitants worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Agni, the fire god. This is where I got that from. You want to have some fun. These ones you see are connected with planets. You know, the nine planets, the seven planets. The other ones are connected to deities, the seven planets, because you notice that when, what's his name, did the charts, the movement actually of the planet, and they're closer and they move smaller, they're closer and they move bigger. I think there's a connection between that particular form and the... That's another thing, but you know. Okay. The master of this, And then the fourth island, Kranchadweep. Oh, wait a minute. The width is 6,400,000 miles, or in other words, twice the width of Salmalidweepa. The fourth island, Kranchadweep, which is surrounded by an ocean of milk, is 12,800,000 miles wide and is also divided, like the others, into seven regions, each with a large mountain and a large river. The master of this island is Grihaprishta, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. The inhabitants of this island worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of water.
Those also considered heavenly
deep that I know of. They're all. Basically, except for Bharata, everything else is no, not Divyaswarga. That'll all be Bhaumaswarga. Okay. Yeah, it's all part of Bhaumaswarga. But it appears that as it goes, everything's bigger. I'm not sure if that means the people are also bigger. But, because the land is getting so much bigger, and only to have one mountain and one river, then what's the benefit? So okay. The fifth island, Shakadweepa, which is 25,600,000 miles wide, is surrounded by an ocean of yogurt. Its master is Medatiti, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. It is also divided into seven regions, each with a large mountain and a large river. Its inhabitants worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vayu, air. But also then if they take the bath, they can also wash off in the river. You know, it's like you go bathe in the ocean and then you come out and then you take a shower and then, you know. Yeah. The sixth island, Pushkaradweep, which is twice as wide as the previous island, is surrounded by an ocean of clear water. Finally. But you haven't heard what its rivers are, right? Yeah. Which is twice as wide as the previous island, is surrounded by an ocean of clear water. Its master's Vitohotra, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. The island is divided in two by a large mountain named Manasotara. The inhabitants of this island worship Swayambhu, another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Beyond Pushkaradweepa, there are two islands, one always lit by the sunshine and the other always dark. Between them is a mountain called Loka Loka, which is situated 1 billion miles from the edge of the universe. Lord Narayana, expanding his opulence, resides upon this mountain. The area beyond Loka Loka Mountain is called Aloka Varsha, and beyond Aloka Varsha is the pure destination of persons who desire liberation. So those two islands, one's in the light, one's in the dark, so it means one's inside Loka Loka and one's outside Loka Loka. So does that mean it's a mountain range, or it's just a single mountain? Okay, so then there's a mountain range, and then there's the Loka Loka mountain range, which is bigger, and then there's the other one, which must be smaller, otherwise why would it be dark? Okay. Vertically, the sun globe is situated just in the middle of the universe, in Antariksha, the space between Burloka and Bhuvarloka. The distance between the sun and the circumference of Andagolaka, the globe of the universe, is estimated to be 25 koti yojanas, 2 billion miles. So that means 4 across, so 2 billion in radius.
Yeah.
Because the sun enters the universe and divides the sky, it is known as Martanda. And because it is produced from Hiranyagarbha, the body of the Mahatattva, it is also called Hiranyagarbha. Because so a lot of Hiranyagarbha is applied in a lot of places. Hiranyagarbha creates like that. So the sun, then things are created and maintained. Brahma is Hiranyagarbha. Then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is known as Hiranyagarbha. Mahavishnu in his mood is I'm the creator is Hiranyagarbha. Right? The universes themselves are known as Hiranyagarbha. Yes. That golden egg, yes. Golden womb. Like that. It just means it's the place of things, generation. Shloka and Sharana. Yes.
I think that there is only one sun in
this universe, only one sun.
But the universe is a Vimandala, Dualoka and Vidalata. Or it's only Vimandala.
No, it's just Burloka means us. Means what has just been described now, that's Burloka. So the sun is between that and outer space.
Yes.
So there's a point at which there aren't anything more and the sun's down there. Right? It's also not situated that high. Right? Means you have the Burloka and then where it's situated is not that high.
Yes.
Because as he moves up and down, then it creates the day and night for the demigods.
Yes.
Like that. While the moon is higher.
Yes.
Like that. Because when it's night, the moon still has to be out.
Yes.
Right? Otherwise, the demigods don't get any moon at night. No, we get the moon.
Yes.
You know, demigods might get envious.
So they also use the same sun.
Same sun. There's one sun for the whole universe. So each universe has one sun.
And the world things, they don't have sun.
Because they're below the Bhumandala. So actually it's dark down there. So it's a whole different scene down there.
They live by the jewels.
Yes. At least Nagaloka, they live by the jewels in their heads. Everybody else, there must be something. The Suryakanta gems and these things. So that's why it's an opulent place. And then probably you get down far enough, then the opulence runs out, and then they can, at best, they can just sit around and have, you know, how you say, wine parties. So I'm not sure what they make it out of, since there's no sun. But
well, have I found it?
Huh?
Well, have I found it?
Yeah. More of a problem. So that's why they're probably smaller parties. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 28. The first five islands surrounding Jambudvipa. Verses 29 to 46, Pushkara Dwipa and beyond. Okay, so first verses 1 to 28, the first five islands surrounding Jambudvipa. Lakshadweep, Salmalidweep, Kushadweep, Kraunchadweep, and Shakadweep are each divided into seven sections by a mountain range and a river. These sections are entrusted to the grandsons of Maharaj Priyavrata, who inherited the land from their father, who retired from active life and strictly engaged in bhakti yoga. The inhabitants of each of these islands strictly practice the system of Varnashram Dharma and worship the Supreme Lord in a specific form with suitable prayer. Said here is, it says that they were a son, and here it says grandson. I guess we'll find out. The great sage Sukadeva Goswami said, "Hereafter I shall describe the dimensions, characteristics, and forms of the six islands, beginning with the island of Plaksha." Right, so the first thing to get across is about how the mentality, the mood, the worship, all this is the most important. Then he'll describe the layout of it, and then he'll get back into their worship of the Lord. Because right? He's mentioned that here the nine, you know, the Jambudvipa has the nine varshas, and then how it's divided, and then gets into how everybody's worshipping there. Like that.
The location is based on mentality and culture.
Yes. Otherwise, why would you be there?
That has some relationship also with the universal form of the world.
It must be something, but exactly how that works. You know, the mountains are his backbone, the rivers are his veins, so. You know, that mean will mean anywhere. So if you can see that, you can see the universal form. But that's why then they move into the personal, because that reminds them of the person, and then they see the person in his form. Srila Viragabhacharya comments, the Jambu Island has been described in detail. Hereafter, Sukha describes Plaksha and other islands by their divisions, magnitudes, features, and the disposition of its inhabitants, whose virtues are always on the ascent. So as it goes out, then they get more and more elevated. Sukadeva Goswami continued, as Sumeru Mountain is surrounded by Jambudweep, Jambudweep is also surrounded by an ocean of salt water. The breadth of Jambudweep is 100,000 yojanas, 800,000 miles, and the breadth of the saltwater ocean is the same. So that means the island and its ocean are the same width, right? As you go out. As a moat around a fort is sometimes surrounded by a garden-like forest, the saltwater ocean surrounding Jambudweep is itself surrounded by Plakshadweep. Right, so, in other words, the ocean is the moat that separates the one from the other.
Yeah.
But because outside there's that open space, then there's a forest, which, you know, it's just beyond. It's not part of your scene. So in the same way as Plakshadweep, then is the forest beyond. That's not part of our scene. Right? So then they'll have, that will be their fort. And then they have their ocean, and then they have their forest beyond. Right. In other words, their view must be going out,
yes,
not in. Same with ours. We're looking out into the ocean.
Yes.
We don't catch that there's another, how you say, some 700,000 miles on the other side. We don't quite catch that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't even, looking out in the ocean, understand. We think it's only about 12,000 miles wide. We don't understand that it's actually a bit wider. Mm-hmm. The breadth of Plakshadweep is twice that of the saltwater ocean. In other words, 200,000 yojanas, 1,600,000 miles. On Plaksha, there is a tree shining like gold and as tall as the Jambu tree on Jambudweep. At its root is a fire with seven flames. It is because this tree is a Plaksha tree that the island is called Plakshadweep.
Does it mention which Varsha the Jambu tree is on? In Jambudweep?
They're all in Mabhadravasa, they're on the mountains that was beside Meru.
Oh, okay, and Jambu is on one of those, so it's called Jambudweep. Okay.
Okay.
What's this tree?
This tree, it is a Plaksha tree. You know what a Plaksha tree is? He does not know. You don't want to know?
I'd like to.
You would like to know.
I'll let you know.
He will let us know. Okay. So you'd have to look into the Sanskrit, what's a Plaksha, and then find the other names, and then find, yeah. It'll be interesting to know what are all the trees. Okay. Plakshadweep was governed by Idma Jihwa, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyavrata. Oh, was governed. Oh, I see. And so then now it comes down to, maybe that's how we get the grandsons. Because here it says, was governed. He endowed the seven islands with the names of his seven sons, divided the islands amongst his sons, and then retired from active life to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The seven islands, Varshas, are named according to the names of those seven sons. So the islands themselves are called Varshas, and then within each one of them there's Varshas.
Yes.
So that's where the confusion would come up, because I didn't understand that one. It's just like, but it's not an uncommon thing that of being done, because it means these major sections,
yes,
right? That they're separate from each other, just like in Mahabharata. It has, what is it, 18, what are they called?
Parvas.
But then within those 18, there's subdivisions of 100 parvas. So you have the main parva, that's divided into parvas. Then those parvas are divided into chapters. Does that make sense? So it's not an uncommon point. We say it's maybe, makes it harder to understand, but the point is those divisions are quite a different area. Just like, let's say you have the Swayamvar Parva. So it's all about the Swayamvar of Draupadi.
So however many chapters are there, it's all about the Swayamvara Draupadi. So that's very different from the Ekachakra Parva, where they were there. You know, there's a connection. They do walk from the other, and there's a chapter there. But that will be the beginning of the next one, to show how they get into that. You understand? So it is a parva. And then you have the Adi Parva, which is about this overall, the arrangements like that. Does that make sense? You know, things that will lead up to the war and all these different kinds of stuff like that. Does that make sense? So in that way, it has the same meaning. Because it appears that somebody on one of these varshas is not connected with somebody on any another varsha.
It has the same meaning if you accept the same meaning process.
Yes, then it becomes very easy. Yeah, because then we understand mentality and all that, so everybody's given their place. You know, so Krishna's by the Upanishad then has given everybody their quota, and so this is our quota. That's why that's all we can see. Right? By the eyes we have and by the senses we have, this is all we can see. Now, if we take up the vision of the acharyas and all that, then we can see beyond. But it's not about seeing beyond. It's about the consciousness that allows us to see beyond, which means Krishna consciousness. So that's what's the important. And this will come on the side. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, if we appreciate this, then we might understand how the universe is set up. But if we think we'll just analyze it because I have a scientific brain, I'll understand it, it's not going to happen. The seven islands, Varshas, are named according to the names of those seven sons: Shiva, Yasava, Subhadra, Santa, Kshema, Amrita, and Abhaya. So does this mean these are the sons of... Okay, and they each manage one a varsha within Plakshadvi. Okay. Okay, so that's why they can say it's governed by those because he was the one that governed the whole thing. And now we're talking about a subdivision. Okay. In those seven tracts of land, there are seven mountains and seven rivers. The mountains are named Manikuta, Vajrakuta, Indrasena, Jyotishman, Suparna, Hiranyastiva, and Meghamala. And the rivers are named Aruna, Nrimna, Nrimna. Because that's in the Samaveda Purusha Shukta. Then in one of the verses in the Samans it uses this nirimna. Nirimna, 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 nirimna. It's a really tongue twister. Like that. Angirasi Savitri Sapta Bhata Ritambhara and Satyambhara. One can immediately be freed from material contamination by touching or bathing in those rivers. So these are all then sacred rivers. You know, like here we have so many sacred rivers, so then those will be sacred rivers there. And the four castes of people who live in Plakshadweep, the Hamsas, Patangas, Udvayanas, and Satyangas, purify themselves in this way. The inhabitants of Plakshadweep live for 1,000 years. They are beautiful like the demigods. And they also beget children like the demigods. That means that they beget like the demigods means the last year of your life. Yes. Then they have a child. Yes. And so after the child is born, then, you know, that's time to take sannyas.
The inhabitants of Jambudvipa, they live for 10,000 years.
That's on the others. Not here. We only live 100.
Yeah, but that means those are less
highest. It seems that the consciousness is highest. They're improving in one way, but at the same time, is their lifespan is. But it's here we live shorter, and it's considered the most pious place. So, less is not. In this case, less is not necessarily less.
Okay. By completely performing the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas, and by worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as represented by the sun god, they attain the sun, which is a heavenly planet.
Right, so they're going to there, but they're worshipping the sun. So they're worshipping Vishnu in the form of the sun. So then they go there. So that's why it's not as ideal as here. Because you worship the Lord and then you go to the spiritual world. 2-4.
In his commentary to verse 3, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The mountain ranges divide the varshas and touch the ocean on both sides, running at right angles to the ocean.
Right, so they're starting from the ocean, in the ocean and going up, and then back down into the ocean. So in other words, what the Chinese were trying to do with their wall is when they built the wall across for the Mongols, they actually took it out into the ocean. Because they figured these guys on horses aren't going to get around that. You know? And I don't think they did.
No.
They just waited until there was chaos in the kingdom and then just came over the wall. So like that, then it divides. Because you have this ocean going out, you're not going to worry about what's on the other side.
The Hamsas, Patangas, Udvayanas, and Satyanas represent the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Their forms and method of producing offspring are like that of the Devatas. So there they also have the same kind of things, just they don't use those names. Like that. But they use the same positions. Like that. Sukadeva Goswami continued. This is the mantra by which the inhabitants of Plakshadweep worship the Supreme Lord. Let us take shelter of the sun god, who is a reflection of Lord Vishnu, the all-expanding Supreme Personality of Godhead. The oldest of all persons, Vishnu is the only worshipable Lord. He is the Vedas, he is religion, and he is the origin of all auspiciousness and inauspicious results. Okay. He's the only worship, he's the Vedas, he's religion, he's the origin of everything that's auspicious. So you see, this is their angle. And we're worshipping the sun god, who is a reflection of the Supreme Lord, but they're understanding that only Krishna is the actual worshipable deity. Right? So that was what was before. If you understand the demigods in connection with the Lord, then that kind of worship is not a problem, like we see in Prithu Maharaj. You know, he's performing these seemingly karmakanda yagyas, and they're offering the oblations to the various, according to the shlokas, to the various demigods. But they're not seeing the demigods as the recipient of that as the Supreme Lord. So that's how Madhvacharya explains. When it says Indra, it means Krishna as the king of everything. So that potency of kingness is there to some degree in Indra. That's how he can do his duties. So by seeing that, then they think, oh, yes, Krishna in his form as the supreme, how you say, manager, like that. So then they'll remember the Supreme Lord, but through Indra. Right? So then they're using that same method.
This is pure demigod worship.
Yes, this you could say would be pure. But it's not about the demigod. Yes. It's just they're following the ritual of the Veda recommends, but they're worshipping the Supreme Lord through that ritual. That's why it's so much easier, because we don't have to actually use those aspects of the Vedic rituals. Narad Muni and that, they've already pulled the essential points from all of that and created a complete system out of that. Right? That knowledge comes from Krishna. Right? But that body of knowledge, because it's practiced and preached by Narad Muni, it's attributed to him. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, there are two kinds of activity, auspicious and inauspicious, and both are controlled by Lord Vishnu. Inauspicious activities are said to be behind Lord Vishnu, whereas auspicious activities stand before him. The auspicious and the inauspicious exist throughout the entire world, and Lord Vishnu is the controller of them both. In regard to this verse, Srila Madhvacharya says, Surya, Somagni Varisha, Vidatrishu Yata Kramam, Plakshari Dvipa Samsasu, Stitam Harim Upasate. There are many lands, fields, mountains, and oceans throughout the creation, And everywhere the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped by his different names.
So his point is that they're worshipping the sun god. They're worshipping Krishna because it's his name, because they're actually worshipping him. Now it's a matter of why will they get benefit? If we look at it from this angle, this brings in a whole deeper understanding. Let's say we have the demigod worshipper, the smarta. And he's not interested in worshipping the Supreme Lord. Right? Not that he doesn't acknowledge he's there and this demigod is somehow or another his servant, but he's interested in worshipping the demigod. And so he performs the ritual very properly according to the rules that worships this demigod. But by what mud, and so therefore he does that, he gets the benefit, he goes to the heavenly planets. Right? Now we'll say it's because he's done that worship of the demigod. But actually, by what's being said here by Madhvacharya, it's because he's worshipped the Lord. Because in this case, the sun god, so if they're worshipping Surya Narayan, he's actually another name of Krishna. So they've worshipped Krishna, but because they've only accepted the material aspect of it, their goal is material, they've only get a material result. They don't see Krishna on the transcendental platform, they're not worshipping with devotion, so therefore they only get that. The jnani is doing the same process. He's worshipping according to the Veda, but he's only worshipping the Lord and understanding, having that desire and only understanding him up to that much. Mm-hmm. Right? So he only understands up to Brahman, so he only gets Brahman. The demigod worshipper only understands up to the demigod, he only attains that demigod. Because mm-hmm. that potency of that demigod that makes him a demigod is Krishna. So he only attains that much. If he sees Krishna as the person, he attains the person. So in this way, there is only worship of Krishna if we're following the auspicious path. But because it's not worshiping Krishna as a person, technically we call this inauspicious also. That's why we say it's a waste of time. So the point is all these things when Krishna gives in the Gita, how he's pervading the universe. If you just see it as, okay, that's that, and okay, it's connected to Krishna, but I'm into the thing, then nice, you've touched it to Krishna, but basically it's a waste of time. But if it's a matter of you touch it to Krishna, and therefore then engage it connected to Krishna, that's the whole purpose of understanding the universal form. Right? So that's what we're trying to do. So the universal form, from that aspect, the duties that are all there, if we see them connected to the Lord as worship of the Lord as a person, we get the person. And if we only see them connected to Paramatma or Brahman, that's all the farther we'll get. And in this case, we also mean Brahman because the material nature that's manifest before us is Brahman. But we're only appreciating its external material form and usage. So that's all we get. Yes.
You brought parallel here to Shakta, Anuman, and Kadasha.
Yes, you could. Like that. So if you only see from pratyaksha, you only get pratyaksha. You see anuman, you get anuman. You see shabda, you should get shabda. So that's the point, is that those who see on that platform can see on all levels. That's what we were saying before. The uttama, he can preach to anybody because he sees all the levels. He sees what... In other words, it's not that the uttamadhikari doesn't see the nature of the individual he's dealing with. We're not seeing, okay, well, here's a cowherd boy and like that, so he starts talking about cows. No, not like that. He sees the nature, but he's not going to deal with that nature. He's going to deal with the purpose that is desired by that nature. So therefore, let's say the person is doing something, but they're doing that, let's say, for security. Then the Uttamadhikari will preach to him about security. The Supreme Lord is the one who gives security. Everything in this world is insecure because it's temporary, but with the Lord, he's eternal. Therefore, if we situate ourselves with him, then we are eternal. Then that creates that stable position we're looking for. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So in other words, the conditioned nature has forms and activities it uses, but there's purposes to that. That's what will be seen by the Uttama. That's why they can preach to anybody. Right? The neophyte will see that form and activity, and that's the real thing. That's the substance. So when there's a difference in that, that's why they don't get along. Because as soon as in Paranjana, then it's this, the point is, if you have desire, then there's mode of ignorance. There's illusion. And from illusion, that will create all the subdivisions, all the isms. Right? So, because of that desire, that creates all these isms. The Madhya doesn't have the desire, but at the same time may not always see that one fine point. So they're dealing with their nature and the conditioning. Mm-hmm. They may be able to get to that point, maybe not able to. Mm-hmm. Means how you say, not necessarily. They're more dependent on dealing with the conditioning than with that primary element. Right? Because you have to judge what they're saying and this and that and how they're responding through the conditioning. Well, the Uttama will just how they're responding as a soul. Same principle, but you understand. It's just more subtle. While for the neophyte, if it matches, then you can preach. Like the devotees who are hippies, they see another hippie, they can just go up to them and start talking and make them into devotees. Right? Therefore, you don't see that many professionals. But those who are on that level could preach on that level and get response. You know, like Satsuru Maharaj, he actually had a job, right? So he could preach to people like that, and they would take him seriously. Yeah, you know. Like I remember I wanted to stay one place at one in New York at one particular, actually it was Joyce. One particular person's house, and he was the biggest businessman of everybody there. Because he's the biggest, naturally, then he's the most advanced. Because he's the most advanced, therefore he's the temple president.
Yes.
Right?
Well,
you know.
Yeah.
It worked. It works for them because they work on that and they're all like that. So everybody else is lesser, so then it works. So but the point is he was very much attracted by Satsuru Maharaj's teachings. And so Satsuru would come, he would stay at his house. Like that. So that's the whole point. He could relate to someone like that. So that's the point, because, you know, his condition is, so he could relate like that. So if you purify the conditioning, of course you can move up in the thing, it doesn't matter. But it's based on the purity, it's not based on the conditioning itself. Okay. So the point is there's only the Supreme Lord being worshipped. Now people who don't follow the Vedas, then by chance, just by their karma, they may be doing something that is recommended in the Vedas, though they don't attribute it to the Veda. So even though it's based on Shabda, they don't know that. They think it's coming from their own mind or from someone else. Right? And so because of that, then the results they get are quite meager. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, is there someone on the planet today in their wealth that they would make 2 million gold coins a year? That doesn't mean on a piece of paper or in you know, how you say, cyberspace, a bunch of numbers. This means actual gold coins sitting right there. You can pick them up and pour them over your head. Right? This is what Raghunath Das Goswami's uncles were making. And that was 500 years ago, so you can imagine 5,000 years ago what they were doing. You know, Duryodhana is as strong as 10,000 elephants. He got tired carrying the wealth that the kings brought. Because what they brought, they didn't give coins, they gave, you know, bricks of gold. You know, in other words, however much somebody who was working in the field, you know, one or two of them could carry. You know, something, you know, because it has to be basically one, you know, because you have to be able to move it, then more can come along and help. But, you know, so there's a limit there. And so that's, you know, kings push the limit, that's what they give. And so they would give 1,000 of those. He would get tired carrying the wealth. So there's a good chance 1,000 of those is easily going to make 2 million gold coins. Right? So that's the whole point, is as you go back, it gets more and more. So people nowadays, they by accident, it means by their karma, but unknown to themselves, they follow something. That's why sometimes they do it, they get the results, sometimes they don't. Because they speculate that I did what I thought, but actually know that they did what's according to the laws of nature. So it worked. And it only worked because they were allowed to do it. And so because of that, then they're successful. But they don't attribute it to that. So they either do it and just think they're doing fine, or they write a book about it, and then other people come along and then try to follow that, and it doesn't work. Yeah. And so then you spend money at the next seminar. Like that. So that's the point. The guy who's successful, that they wrote the book about, if you gave him $2,000, he could go and invest it and make more money. But instead, these people are paying $2,000 to go to his seminar and still walk out of there $2,000 less than when they walked in. Right? While the guy who's giving the seminar walks out of there with a couple of million, literally. Right? $2,000, there's, let's say, so many thousands go to the seminar. Right? Like that. And so, how much is that? Now they've hired the big fancy hotel, you know, flying around, this, that, you know, so some hundreds of thousands go into that for that, you know, weekend or whatever it is like that. What's left? Millions. Right?
Yes,
definitely. But then who can use it? Only the people that have the karma to do it. But yeah, definitely that would be a book. You'd make money off of making it. Okay. That was the interesting thing in the Vedic culture, is if someone was a good student, they would teach them how much they could learn. They would never worry that he may learn more than me. Because the point is you'll only learn according to your karma. So you teach him, and he learns more than you. He would have learned more than you even if you didn't teach him. So that's why in the South, then you see nowadays, if you're a qualified student, they'll teach you. But in the North, they wouldn't. They would only teach those who are family and stuff like this, because they're trying to keep in the family. Then the problem is that the family members may be qualified, but may not be qualified. So therefore, the knowledge gets lost. You know, it's just not known.
Yes.
Yes. Plus, you also get is that they'll realize things in that. So the teacher learns. The teacher knows how to teach, so he can take him through that process of realization. But it's not that the realizations that the student is getting, the teacher's not learning. Okay? So that's the whole point. It's a dynamic process. Right? Sugadeva Goswami is learning things by Pariket Maharaj's questions and then him having to explain it. Right? And Prickett is learning by the explanations of Sukadeva. So they're both learning. It's just a matter of who is in what position. So therefore, Sukadeva is a qualified teacher. Prickett's a qualified student. As far as it's dynamic, there's no difference. That's why the Vedic system is so far superior. But we tend to apply it according to our own conditioned thought. So therefore, the teacher's superior. He's only in the way that it makes it work, but as far as his realization, not necessarily. But it's not that you can't gain something. If it's a sincere teacher and a sincere student, they can both learn. But if you're not sincere, then you're not going to learn from anybody anyway. Okay.
Srila Vairagavacharya explains that this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. The original cause of the cosmic manifestation must be the eldest person, the oldest person, and must therefore be beyond material transformations. He is the enjoyer of all auspicious activities, right? Because if he's beyond the universe, he's beyond transformations, because the universe transforms. Right? If he's the origin of the universe, he can't be transforming. Right? Otherwise, halfway through the creation of the universe, he may have transformed to the point he can't transform it anymore. And so then the universe either stops transforming or just evaporates, right? Depending upon who's the screenwriter. Yes, like that.
But this would be an interesting
class, though. Yeah. No, so then it would work. You could probably get something out of it. Right, and then it'll be the American Maverick will work out something that neither the others know to work it out so that, you know, his part of the universe doesn't disappear, though maybe everything else, and then he comes out on top and all that. Right? And where in there is the girl, I don't know, but they'll work it in. There's screenwriters. Yeah, they'll figure it out.
He is the enjoyer of all auspicious activities, and he is the cause of conditional life and also liberation. The demigod Surya, who is categorized as a very powerful jiva, or living entity, is a representation of one of the parts of his body, the Lord. We are naturally subordinate to powerful living entities, and therefore we can worship the various demigods as living beings who are powerful representations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although the worship of the sun god is recommended in this mantra, he is worshipped not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but as his powerful representative.
Right? So you don't make the mistake that he's just a demigod on his own. You don't make the mistake that he is the Supreme Lord. He is the representative of the Lord. Right? Just like, you know, that mistake that our foolish Pujari is making. Right? How you say? Bengal's heritage foolish Pujari. That he's thinking the dog itself is the Supreme Lord. Right? You know, we're either seeing it as just a dog or he's seeing it as God. But actually, the dog represents an aspect of the universal form. That's why it has its dogness. Right? So but it's not recommended to worship dog, therefore we stick to the demigods. There's already 33 million of them. We don't need to throw in the dogs also.
Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki.